Welcome to the Devin Nunes Podcast, breaking through the political noise, separating fact from fiction. Stay up to date by following Devin on Rumble.com to watch the podcast or downloading wherever you listen to podcasts. From the San Joaquin Valley, the breadbasket of the solar system, here's your host, Devin Nunes.
Welcome back to the Devin Nunes Podcast. We have Michael Anton back again, author of The Stakes, professor at Hillsdale College, a former Trump official in the National Security Council spokesman, and all around great guy because he's from California, right down the road from me, a San Joaquin Valley product. Mike, no one follows this closer than you. You've been on the inside, you've been on the outside. You actually predicted the Trump election in many ways with your first anonymous book. It was called Flight 93 election.
Yeah. Actually, though, I don't want to give myself credit for that. I didn't predict it. I still thought he was going to lose. I was just making the case for why I thought he should win.
So look, here we are. We've got small divisions within, I would say small divisions within the Republican Party, very, very small, of people who were either part of the establishment or the swamp or who never really liked Donald Trump. But it's small numbers. And I know a lot of people get frustrated out there, a lot of my listeners who say, well, the Republicans aren't doing this or they aren't doing that. But I would say Donald Trump was a transformative figure, and he really has changed the way that Washington has worked. But at the same time, I mean, I really like him. I like him personally. He's always fighting. But at the same time, you take on a lot of incoming if you're always fighting. And ultimately, I think that's what got the president here. But with that said, Mike, as you look at this moving forward, the president has a couple of different ways to go here. He's still the most popular Republican. He has the most votes ever as a Republican. And so the question is, and I haven't asked the president this, but is he going to continue to be a leader in the Republican Party? Because he is the most popular Republican. He essentially is the de facto leader right now. Or is he going to do something else? Or is there something in between? How do you view his options? And what do you think is most likely?
That's a really hard question to answer. I mean, his options are, I would say, let's first run in 2024. Second, don't run in 2024, but do what former presidents often do, which is remain a kind of leading figure in the party, support candidates, campaign for them, and so on. And a third might be to go in a more of a media direction. And the fourth might be to just kind of lay low. All of these options are, except for the fourth, obviously, are complicated by the way he went out. I mean, he went out more vilified than any president since Nixon. And whether you think that that's deserved or not, it is a fact that the mainstream media and the dominant culture is more unified than it was in 1974. And so overcoming that is very difficult. I'm not saying it's impossible, but he's just in an unprecedented situation that even the closest precedent you could think of, which is Nixon in 74, is not the same because of the media ecosystem is much more of just a brick wall, just a uniform wall that would be hard for him to climb over or get through. So that's probably why we're not hearing a lot from him, among other reasons right now, is because he's thinking about it. I would assume he's like, you know, he doesn't, it's not, when it's not obvious to know what to do, you kind of take some time and ponder it and, you know, kind of think it through and consult people and see what others advise you to do and what your own head ultimately tells you is the right thing to do.
And I will tell you, though, that, and there's a bubble, and you're exactly right, the mainstream media, most educational systems, all the popular culture out there, and the fact that they're controlling social media and the internet makes it very, very difficult. But at the same time, every day that goes by, the more that we're censored, the more that people are censored, the more people will push back. And yeah. So when social media, ultimately, they're going to go to their own corners. You've already seen the challenges with Fox News, when Fox News was characterized as either turning left or not being fair. You had these new companies that have kind of been out there, One American News and Newsmax, that now are getting huge ratings. And so I think the same is true ultimately for these social media companies that decide to take the route of not doing political censorship. And that may be kind of the ultimate opportunity for the president to come back.
Well, at a minimum, even if you don't get pushback, which I think you're probably right, we will see pushback. But at a minimum, what's going to happen and is already happening is a huge portion of the country, close to half, maybe not quite half, will just tune out all the official channels. They just stop listening. I don't think, you know, I think this has been true for a while, and it took another great leap forward. The extent to which the New York Times and CNN and the Washington Post and the Ivy Leagues and so on, they're only talking to one another. You know, how many of your constituents listen to, the only reason they listen to what those organs have to say is, to the extent in my case, is that they can't avoid it, right? Because it's so pervasive, even if you're not looking for it, even if you're not subscribing to the New York Times or watching CNN, one way or another, their messages will find their way to you. But in a perverse way, that's kind of an advantage for Republicans or populists or whatever you want to call it, in the sense that we know what the other side thinks and what they think of us. We can't help but know, because they're blasting it in our faces every day. They really don't know anything about us or what we think. They just are in complete ignorance in their bubble. And I would say also, on the one hand, it's a sign of power to have the New York Times and Harvard and so on and so forth, to have these citadel institutions that you can use to control the official narrative, right? On the other hand, though, it's a sign of weakness to need to censor and bully and propagandize and to suppress open debate. It's a way of saying, like, I'm afraid of what will come out of this. Therefore, I have to suppress it, stop it, censor it. And this is not new. The means are new in human history, but the effects of what we're looking at are not new in human history. And it can't last. That's not to say it's going to end tomorrow or next year or whatever. But, you know, it's usually the sign of weakness and instability. Any kind of one party rule is, and it's finite.
What's going to ultimately save us here, and I'm ultimately an optimist, is actually the Democratic Republic. And it's why I think the left is trying to push us towards, we're a democracy, big federal government. You know, this is why they want to get rid of the electoral college. But, you know, ultimately, there's so many examples, even in this past year, about states that essentially said, look, we're going to use real science. We're not going to use panic science. We're going to keep things mostly open. And then you have odd things happening, like some of the places that were most locked down are the ones that had the most COVID deaths.
Yeah.
And so ultimately, I think that's what's going to save us here. And the question is do some of these states fall apart, like our home state of California? You know, do they fall apart? And you're right. I just feel like every single day, more and more Americans are turning off the news because, like you said, it's right in your face. I just don't remember a few years ago of, you know, my Apple iPhone blowing up every 2 hours. Joe Biden going to be inaugurated.
Yeah.
Joe Biden now inaugurated. Joe Biden, you know, stops to go to the bathroom. Joe Biden parade just now starts. And then, you know, I have Comcast and, you know, and it's flashing there, like, look at the results of the inauguration. It's just, you know, and for Donald Trump, he never received that. In fact, the institutions were targeting him.
It's pretty ham-fisted and pretty obvious. It's not subtle. I just think people are laughing at it or tuning it out. So this is one of those things that can last for as long as it lasts, right? If you have control of all of the opinion-forming organs of a society, all the commanding heights, you can use them to your benefit. But, you know, I do think 47% of the country is either not listening to it or laughing at it. Or just absolutely dismissing it. And that is in and of itself a problem, because what they've made pretty clear with their rhetoric lately is they think that support for Trump, a vote for Trump, ipso facto makes you illegitimate. You're just bad. You can't, you know. And so, well, how do you rule, you know, what did Trump get? 75 million votes. And so beyond that, I'm sure there are a lot of people who wanted to vote for him and just didn't go. And then there are dependents who can't vote yet because they're right. So you're looking at conceivably 100 million people or something that the people who run the country and all of its institutions say have no voice, legitimate voice, have no real legitimate role in the political system. They're just bad. I mean, we have some saying openly, like, these people need to be deprogrammed. Okay. This is just a recipe for instability at best and conflict at worst. If the left keeps on with this.
Right. If you look kind of what's happened over time here, the radical left has taken over the Democratic Party. And their ultimate problem is they can control the levers of power, but if your ideas don't work, right? For example, in California, I don't know if we're going to be able to come back as a state in the short term. I've a lot of times predicted that we're going to ultimately fall because they've suppressed so many businesses here in California. You see the same thing in New York and Manhattan. For a long time, those were artificially built up because you had people that wanted to live there. Well, now you're seeing the Elon Musks of the world, you know, who's no like right-wing conservative, you know, he's leaving, he's bashing them, you know, and they're taking the capital is fleeing with them, their financial capital. So how do you see this as, you know, kind of as this plays out? Their policies aren't going to work. They've never worked. I think they have hit a pinnacle of, as you said, the commanding heights of power. They control all the levers. I mean, anything that comes into, they control the entire propaganda apparatus. So what are your kind of just closing thoughts?
In a sense, California cannot fall. I mean, unless there's some kind of apocalyptic plague or whatever, but look, it's too beautiful. Resources are too abundant. It has too many things going for it. The current regime or arrangement for how it works, that can fall, that can collapse. But then I think inevitably, unless, you know, an earthquake just destroys it entirely and it falls into the ocean, like in, you know, the original Superman movie that came out when I was 8, it's going to be there, and its resources are going to be there, and its geography is going to be there, and some people are going to be there, and some of them are going to realize, wow, we really screwed this up horribly. So what do we do now to rebuild? And they're going to do something different, presumably. I know in the long arc of human history, societies do fail and collapse, but the land that they're on exists. People reorganize and they restart and they do something different. I think that will probably have to happen eventually. You know, the California benefits in a sense. It's a free rider. Like a lot of, I think, deep blue areas are on the functioning parts of the United States, right? California, ever since I was a kid, every governor of California has liked, Republican and Democrat alike, although there aren't, you know, Republican governors anymore, but there used to be in the far off time of my youth. They would all like to boast about, oh, we're the, whatever the number was at the time, the fifth largest, the sixth largest, the seventh largest economy in the world. We're a nation state. Newsom loves this nation state. The thing is, here's the irony of it. If California were really independent of the rest of the United States and had to do everything for itself, it would be much further along the road to just total oblivion than it is now, because it free rides off of a lot of the residual social, political, economic, and other capital that is inherent in the broader United States, including huge parts of the red parts of the United States. And that's something that I think these sort of blue elites don't really get. They look at their gleaming towers. So then the world is sort of divided up into, maybe off the top of my head, three types of places. You know, urban centers where all the blue, cool, hip tech jobs are, university towns, and nice vacation spots. And like the rest of, you know, so California for these guys is West LA, San Francisco, Berkeley, Palo Alto, Palm Springs, Tahoe, Pebble Beach. Is there more to it than that? I don't know. I've never been to any of these places. Do they exist? Well, they do exist, and they grow your food. And they make your stuff, and they ship things, and they do all the kinds of... Victor Davis Hanson is wonderful on this point. And it's like, there's this huge part of the economy that is not glamorous, but that is absolutely necessary to everything else functioning, that blue elites just abstract from, take for granted, and almost pretend doesn't exist. And that's not sustainable over the long term either.
Right, and not appreciating those people that, I like to say.
Yeah, the people, especially the people who do this kind of stuff.
It's the farmers, it's the welders, it's the guys that are out doing the landscaping, the construction folks. It's so, and of course, just happens to be where you and I are from, and we've kind of witnessed this, and it's really, really kind of laughable and sad. Any parting thoughts on, so you kind of started this segment with Trump. Any final thoughts on, you know, he's out golfing, I guess, in Florida. What do you expect to see in the coming year here?
I expect to see a pretty hard radicalized Democratic agenda try to, you know, ram through as much as they can, as quickly as they can. From Trump, I make no prediction. I just don't know. He like I said, he may decide to reemerge in one way or another. Look, I think it's easier to predict he'll reemerge in some way because he's been a public figure since I was a little kid in one way or another, not necessarily in politics, but either in business, in real estate, in media, in politics. And, you know, the lifetime habit like that is hard to break. It's hard to see a guy like Donald Trump, who's been in the spotlight pretty much his whole life, just riding off into the sunset, never to be heard from again. But what form that takes, I couldn't say.
Well, if you don't know, Mike, I don't think anybody can predict it. So I want to thank you again for being on. And then we're going to come back in a few days. We will air a segment on the Biden foreign policy. Mike's done a lot on foreign policy. His book is The Stakes. And Mike, I want to thank you again for being on.
Thanks.
It's Devin Nunes, and we'll catch you in a few days.
Stay up to date by following Devin Nunes on Rumble.com to watch the podcast or download wherever you listen to podcasts.
Storm clouds been gathering so long, I don't know.
The darkness around us leaves no easy road.
We started wondering if every road dead ends our dreams.
Wind whips the dust up and rain's pouring down.
Good people struggling in every hometown.
We started wondering if we even matter at all.
Trial by fire like this.
It's nothing hard work and family can fix.
We've got the power to save it all here in our hands. We'll take that hard road to happier days. Cause we kept our American faith. We're already half the way there. We'll take that hard road to happier days. Cause we've kept our American faith.
Paid for by Devin Nunes Campaign Committee.